Welcome to Be Simply. This is She, and I want to thank you for joining us today. We have special guest Dr. Scott Morehouse. He is one of the co-founders and co-creators of the ClearPop. He's going to share about this invention and how he was inspired to bring this to market. In addition, he'll share how one action can lead to a reaction in the physical well-being of our children and why this is such an exciting offering that they are bringing to the marketplace. In addition, to be transparent and clear, I want to fully disclose that I do have shares in this company. I was around when the ideas started to percolate, and that is not the inspiration for my interview. I'm just proud of them for persevering and bringing this to market, yet want to be completely transparent with the listeners. I think you'll be pleasantly inspired and surprised by all that he has to share. So without further ado, let's dive in with Scott.
Thank you for being here today. I'm really excited to shine a light on your vision and your creation, which is the ClearPop. I'd love for you to share with the audience your inspiration behind this product and actually what it is.
Thank you so much for having me, first of all, on the interview. And basically, you know, I'm a dad, I'm a physician, a physician for adults, and I'm also a father and of two children. And our kids, when they were young, had a lot of ear infections. And so, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, and this is how this whole thing started. Was I was unhappy with the standard of care for earaches, or acute otitis media, as we call it. And so I was seeking something better.
Mm-hmm. If you can share a little bit about your discovery during the process of creating the ClearPop with your kids, and also being that you are a physician, having taken, you know, I don't know if it's an oath, the best way to call it, but taking on the responsibility to do best by your patient.
Right.
For me, this is kind of one of those inventions, creations, ahas, that is doing best by the patient.
That was definitely one of the original goals, was to create something not just that was effective, but that was safe. Basically what we've done is by using, you know, I was in a fortunate position to be, to have a little bit of knowledge of physiology from having studied medicine and anatomy. And then secondly, I was in a fortunate position to be surrounded by a bunch of engineers. So this ended up being kind of a collaboration between the doctors and the engineers, and we used kind of our knowledge of basic human physiology and, you know, fluid dynamics and physics to kind of figure out a way to mechanically drain the eustachian tube, which is what gets clogged up in acute otitis media or earaches. We figured out a way to do that, and concurrent with that, we were trying to develop something that we thought would be extremely safe. And we understood the way that the eustachian tube drains into the mouth, but we thought something like a lollipop might work if we designed it properly. And the entire time we were designing it, we were trying to make sure that it wouldn't be like a common lollipop from the safety standpoint, wherein, you know, a spherical lollipop can pop off of a stick.
Mm-hmm.
And we never wanted that to happen. We've learned since that there are about 15 asphyxiation deaths a year from common lollipops in the United States, and we wanted to avoid that at all costs, obviously. So when we designed this thing, safety first was the mantra, you know, of course. And it was certainly with a pediatric product like this, it was more important than anything. You know, if it worked, great, but let's make sure first do no harm, we always say in the trade.
Right.
And then ultimately, we of course got it to work in, you know, about 89% of the cases. After, you know, kind of doing this engineering to make it work. So that's how it all started. You know, we were making lollipops in our kitchen, testing them on our own kids, trying to figure out the optimum shape, working with the engineers, and then the safety handle came to be, you know, to make sure that the sugar part of the clear pop wouldn't come off of the handle.
Mm.
All of this was going on concurrently, and we were working kind of feverishly for years, really, to just perfect it. And I think we've come up with it. So that's the evolution of it. But certainly, it all started because my own kids had headaches, and we wanted to come up with a solution that wasn't antibiotics and it wasn't watchful waiting, which is basically do nothing.
Right. And if you can share with the listeners to educate them a little bit on an earache and the phases of it. So, you know, as a parent, you have a kid and they're screaming in pain, and you know, we don't typically like that as a parent myself. So if you can share kind of the phases of an earache / ear infection and what the best modality steps are to take.
To back all the way up, really, to just kind of explain the physiology of it, you know, you have your eustachian tube is the tube that drains the middle ear into the throat. And the end of that tube is your eardrum from the inside. If you were to put a Q-tip in your ear from the outside, and if you've ever hit your eardrum, it's a very unpleasant sensation, but you're hitting your eardrum with that Q-tip. On the other side of that eardrum is your eustachian tube, and that drains directly into the throat. Now, in a child, that eustachian tube is narrower, and it's also at more of a flat angle than in an adult. And because of that narrow gauge of the tube and that angle, it doesn't drain very well. And that's why children are very susceptible to earaches, much more so. You know, it's really a problem of childhood, and very few adults get earaches. So what we are trying to do with this product is help to drain that eustachian tube mechanically. We created the shape of the head of this clear pop is shaped somewhat like an oral cavity to maximize the negative intraoral pressure, and it pulls the fluid directly out of the eustachian tube. So that's kind of how it works. We have the child do a maneuver where they lay with their bad ear up. And that's important because gravity helps us, but we have a child. And of course, a lot of this is so much easier to explain visually than in an interview. And on our website, we will have a movie at some point, you know, kind of showing the basic physiology of this. But we use that knowledge to solve this problem. I've often said it's kind of a collaboration between doctors and engineers solving a mechanical problem, coming up with a mechanical solution for a mechanical problem that really does not require antibiotics, which has a whole host of side effects that, you know, we can just talk about later. But
if your child is exhibiting pain, administer a clear pop before running to the doctor for pain relief and or antibiotics, right?
Right. That's a great question. So how does this play out in the real world? So you have a child, and one of the ways that the eustachian tube gets clogged up, the main way that the eustachian tube gets clogged up, is the child gets a cold. You know, and the colds are pervasive, and colds are an important part of a child's development. You know, those are healthy colds that the kid is getting. The kid is developing antibodies against viruses and developing the immune system as they grow up. And so colds are actually a natural part of the development of the human immune system, and an important part of it. So, but with those colds, you know, everybody gets sniffly and everyone's a little bit miserable through the winter months. But with those colds, you get inflammation all over the place in your nose, in your throat, in the eustachian tube. And with that inflammation and swelling, your eustachian tube, which already doesn't drain normally very well anyway, as we talked about already with kids, it gets even more vulnerable to clogging because of the swelling. So the cold comes, the virus comes, you know, the cold and the virus comes, and then the eustachian tube gets clogged. And so this child starts feeling, after they first, they may have the sniffles, and then the next day they may have an earache. And the earache of a keratitis media is kind of a common earache. There are other earaches, like swimmer's ear, that are not to be confused with the standard earache of a keratitis media. Earaches from swimmer's ear are typical itchy sensation. It's more on the outside of the ear. The kid wants to put their finger in their ear to try to scratch it. That's a different problem that can be helped with antibiotic earache drops. or even just, you know, making sure that the fluid is out of the ear with the simple, like, hydrogen peroxide and water solution. All of those earache swimmer's ear remedies work pretty well, and we're not going after swimmer's ear with this at all. So just to differentiate those are the two common types of earache. Standard earache is much more common in the winter months. The other one's a summer thing, you know, when kids are swimming a lot. So the earache that comes after the common cold is the one that we're targeting. Now, the child may start feeling pain and complaining of the ear. They were rubbing on their ear instead of trying to scratch it. The older the child is, the easier it is for them to describe what's happening. But most parents understand when their kids have an earache. The kid complains of an earache, or in a little baby, they may be pulling at their ear. That being said, this isn't designed for really kids under two. Those kids really should be seen by the pediatrician for sure. But over two, if the parent is diagnosing this, it seems like it's related to a common cold, they're having ear pain, there's no reason that they couldn't try this first. The clear pump that is, and it's going to work in like 15 or 20 minutes anyway. So maybe before even calling the pediatrician to make an appointment, you could try this. And it will be available over the counter and online and everything else. So the child has an earache, the mom or dad would administer the clear pop, have the child lay down either on their pillow or on mom and dad's lap with the bad ear up, and suck on this thing without chewing it. Try to suck on it and maintaining that pressure seal and kind of working the infection out of the eustachian tube. That's how it would work. And in our kids and our friends and in the clinical trials that we did, it was pretty dramatic how quickly the kid got better. Usually anywhere between 10 and 20 minutes, and then you go from a child with an earache and possibly a bacterial infection in the eustachian tube to a well child. So this is why we're excited about this. You know, there's all the fact that we're going to try to combat superbugs is another bonus of it. We're not exposing bacteria to antibiotics, so there's less of a chance of development of superbugs, and there's also a very delicate symbiotic relationship that children have with the bacteria in their gut. That is a beautiful balance that, you know, the human body has developed over millennia to get this right. And when we put antibiotics in there, we're really messing it up. And we don't even understand, we're at the tip of the iceberg with that bit of knowledge that we have on, disruption of the human microbiota. That's a new field of a lot of excitement that a lot of people are studying, but there's been some correlation between overuse of antibiotics in children with childhood obesity, childhood diabetes, and a whole host of other problems. But there's mounting literature that show that there is some relationship there. So there's definitely a downside to the use of antibiotics when they're not used. They can be life-saving, don't get me wrong, they can be life-saving when used appropriately. But we don't feel that earaches are that situation.
Right. Being that, I think we both are from the era where it was definitely a lot of antibiotics for ear infections,
right.
Maybe
absolutely
still today. And if you can share a little bit more in depth about the impact of your intestinal tract and long-term, because it appears with all the people with gut issues now are from the era of getting a lot of antibiotics for everything, different forms of drugs to treat whatever. So if you could share just a little bit of knowledge about that, just to educate the listeners.
Yeah, I mean, I could give an example of a bacteria. I read this New York Times series by Michael Pollan, a food and science writer, and he was describing the human microbiome, and he described one particular bacteria, I believe it was called a Bifidobacterium infantum. And infantum means that, you know, obviously it's related to a bacteria that's one of the early bacteria that populates the gut of the infant, the newborn. And this bacteria, Bifidobacterium infantum, relies specifically on lactose. And lactose comes from mother's milk. And if you were to think about the optimum human food, it would be mother's milk. I mean, it has evolved over, you know, thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years to be the perfect food for a newborn. Now, this food feeds not only the newborn, but it feeds that particular bacteria that lives in the stomach or in the small intestine of the baby. Now, that is the perfect symbiotic relationship if you think about it. That bacteria cannot thrive unless it's getting the lactose from breast milk. That's an example wherein we have these friendly bacteria in our body, and we actually have the average human adult has about 5 pounds of friendly bacteria in and on our body. It's about the size of your liver, if you think of a clump of bacteria. That's how much bacteria we have that we live with in a healthy person. So if your goal is to eliminate all the bacteria in your skin and in your gut, then you're going to be a very unhealthy person. We're not doing that intentionally when we give antibiotics to children. We're not trying to kill all the bacteria. People have a pretty good sense that there's friendly bacteria in the body. And in fact, what's funny is that we, in the hospital, in adults, we'll often prescribe antibiotics and then we chase those with probiotics, something called BSL number 3, and other probiotics that we prescribe for the adult after we prescribe a course of antibiotics or concurrent with that. We prescribe a course of probiotics. We often tell our patients to eat yogurt so that they don't deplete all of the friendly bacteria, but we have no idea what we're doing and how we're mixing up or how we're messing with this beautiful, delicate balance in the human gut. So that's a definite downside of the use of antibiotics. I don't want to, just to back up a little bit, I don't want to scare people from antibiotics because there are situations when somebody gets very sick, say like bacterial meningitis, where if you don't use antibiotics, you can die. And there are situations where people have an infection in their appendix or their gallbladder or a really serious skin infection that might be creeping into the bloodstream where they are definite life-saving. But to that point, if you use antibiotics so often for infections like sinusitis or genotitis media or the common cold even, then their potency is going to run out and you're not going to have them to treat these really serious infections. But we need to be, cautious in our use of them.
Agreed. Save them for when you really need them. Scott, this is exciting. I would love for you to share as a doctor, a Western medical doctor, up in a pretty progressive area of North America in the San Francisco, Berkeley area, meaning there's a lot of, thinking going on up there, I think, and action. If you can share from your perspective as a doctor where these discoveries are becoming more and more obvious. I've seen recently some great studies from UCLA and USC about reversal of Alzheimer's, reversal of heart disease in conjunction with monitoring through Western Med, but also through diet and food and taking different approaches. From your perspective, being in the hospital, what is unfolding for you and how does it feel to be kind of at this place where it seems like West and East is starting to get together, just like this in this creation, engineers and doctors coming together to create a solution?
Well, certainly the field of medicine was starting when I was at UCSF in residency that they call complementary medicine. The complementary medicine is kind of the merging of Eastern and Western medicine and pulling best from both. There are a lot of skeptics in Western medicine about Eastern medicine and alternative medicine, but there's also, to think that we know everything is absurd, there's some literature, mounting literature on acupuncture, and certainly, there's a lot of non-harmful treatment modalities out there that should be tried before we do things like, say, intravenous antibiotics for certain conditions or maybe, before somebody has spine surgery. There's no harm in trying complementary medicine, maybe stretching exercises, maybe some acupuncture. People find, relief with these, and in fact, there's been some studies that show that people that get vertebral compression fractures in the elderly, folks that have spine kind of minor spine surgery where they go in and put like a cement in there versus doing nothing. They're showing pretty similar effects, you know? And sometimes we try to do these really aggressive treatment options when they're not necessary. So we're learning a lot. We're getting humbler in Western medicine and learning that there are some definite benefits. Certainly, my physician, my personal physician that I work with, the UCSF trained doc, he does acupuncture in concurrently with Western medicine, and he's found some really great benefits of it. I know that I can't quote the literature off the top of my head. That's definitely a growing field. We're trying to become more open to these things. I think insurance companies are also excited about the possibility of complementary medicine because oftentimes it's a lot cheaper. Certainly in homeopathic medicine, or even the best accepted, on the shelves of the pharmacies is because it does no harm. I don't think that it, that's a whole other topic for me. I don't think that it really is any better than placebo in most cases. There's not a lot of data to point to the benefits of homeopathy, but it doesn't do any harm. And so we need to start being more accepting of things that do no harm than, aggressive treatments that actually could do some harm. And I think that's a widening field.
Exciting times.
Yeah.
With the Clear Pop, can you share with the listeners kind of the next steps for you guys and where it's available, when it's available, and how people can give you feedback?
Okay, well, so for us, as I'm one of the physicians involved in this. I started this project in 2010 with another doc who was an infectious disease doc, a UCLA-trained colleague of mine. So for us, and then since then, we've probably had 40 doctors involved, either from feedback or from financial support to kind of get this project off the ground. But for us, it's a big public health push. There are about 20 million office visits a year in the United States for cutaneous media. And despite the fact that the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends watchful waiting, in most situations, still a full 80% of those office visits result in a prescription for antibiotics. So there's a big public health component for us because we don't want to see antibiotics overused. And I can talk a little bit more about that in a minute, about what we're seeing in the hospital. But for us, we really want it to see it used as often as possible and as widely as possible. In an effort to do that, we've released it for sale on clearpop.com at this point. Amazon, we had a little technical glitch that's held us up, but we should be available in the next week or two. And then we're just getting some traction. We have lines in the water at about 20 different pharmacies. And this is all happening in the last week. So we're getting some nibbles, and we have a verbal commitment from a pharmacy distributor on the East Coast in North and South Carolina and Virginia that's now has connections with 500 pharmacies. So in the next month or two, we should start seeing it in pharmacies all over the West Coast. And we suspect that with the demand that we're getting from the consumers on the consumer side, moms and dads, and then also pediatricians, that this thing should be available everywhere. And in fact, we went down to the American Academy of Pediatrics Advances in Pediatric Medicine. That was in Irvine 2 weekends ago. And we had a booth there, one of about only 20 booths. And we had literally 100 pediatricians come up to our booth, excited. We ran out of all of our samples on the first day. They were all signing up on our mailing list. Many of them have requested 3 samples. And so we're starting to get traction in the pediatrician's office. So the pediatricians want it, the parents want it, the kids love it, and then all of the doctors that are supporting it that aren't even pediatricians want to see it used because of its benefits from a public health standpoint.
And so share a little bit more about public health and your passion for being of service to the community at large.
Right. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to save antibiotics for life-threatening infections. We're doing that with this project because this does not involve antibiotics. When we when we're in the hospital, just to give you a couple of little stories, you know, I take care of adults in the hospital. And when we're in the emergency room admitting people, often very sick, some of the time these folks have bacterial infections. You know, it takes us a couple of days to grow the cultures and the petri dishes, but we find that we're getting these more and more and more resistant bugs. These are what we call superbugs. There are bugs called, you know, a lot of folks know about MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, VRE, which is vancomycin-resistant enterococcus, and a host of others, ESBL, now CRE, which is carbapenem-resistant enterococcus, and more and more and more virulent bugs. And I got to tell you, I work side-by-side with infectious disease doctors almost every day of my life, and they're a little bit panicked. Not to create a public scare, but they are very worried about the bacteria that are coming down the pipeline that they just can't treat with anything. So we're seeing our parents and grandparents come in, and maybe they just had a simple hip surgery, they acquired an infection somehow post-operatively in a nursing home or something, and they have now these infections that are coursing in their bloodstream that they just cannot treat. So it scares the heck out of them in the hospital. We have something called C. diff, which stands for Clostridium difficile, which is a bacterial infection that occurs in the gut from overuse of antibiotics. That's a bacteria that exploits that situation of the kind of the semi-sterile gut when a lot of the friendly bacteria have been killed off. It allows the C. diff to proliferate, and that can cause all kinds of diarrheal problems. And, you know, folks, there are thousands of deaths every year in the United States from that infection alone. And that's another consequence of overuse of antibiotics and then also superbugs. You know, if we have superbugs proliferating in the human body and we're treating them with one antibiotic and another antibiotic and then another antibiotic, you can see how this becomes a vicious cycle. With more and more viral bugs. So you can see there's pretty obvious public health implications here to our project. And we've seen this situation. We realized that there was a situation where there's a simple mechanical solution that is being treated with an antibiotic that isn't really necessary. Now, I have to, you know, make sure the listener understands that there are certain situations. If you have an effusion of the earache, wherein the earache, the tympanic membrane is burst, and there's pus coming out of the ear, that's an obvious situation where you would want antibiotics. There are certain situations where the child is extremely sick. If they're getting lethargic, they just really can't move around much. You really want them to be seen by the pediatrician. Parents are pretty good at identifying when their kids are sick. You know, if a child is very, very sick, you need to be seen by a healthcare professional. But most of the time, I would say, venture to guess, that about 90% of the time your kids have an earache, it's something that can be dealt with at home. And if you call an advice nurse, they'll often tell the parents to, you know, pursue a course of watchful waiting with, ibuprofen or children's Tylenol and wait it out for a day or two before they come to the pediatrician. And this would be a perfect situation wherein we could use the clear pump. But there are obvious, you know, public health implications to the project.
Beautiful. Well, I'm personally really proud of you and everyone that's been involved, and just thankful that there are conversations going on within medicine and science to help watch out for all of us that maybe aren't as educated or aware or don't have the opportunity to see what's happening, you know, the cause and effect of one thing to the next. So it's really exciting that you guys persevered and brought this to market.
Yeah, we're excited about it. We feel very lucky and fortunate to be a part of this too, you know, just having seen what happens in the community and to have a little bit of knowledge of physiology. We're, you know, I'm surrounded by a lot of other doctors and like I said, engineers, and so I've just basically taken the situation and trying to use it for the, you know, a good outcome here.
Well, well done. We're going to put the links on here, clearpop.com, and you guys are on Facebook and Twitter. We'll put all that on there. We're excited to see you guys grow and help the community at large.
Well, we're excited to be a part of it. And thank you so much, Suzanne, for interviewing me. It's been a pleasure. It's obvious that I like talking about this subject, and if we can get it out to some listeners, it's fantastic.
Beautiful. Well, thank you.
Once again, I want to thank Scott for sharing all his wisdom with us today. If inspired, please connect to the Clear Pop at the link below and send them your feedback. They would love to hear how it impacts your family and your children. May we all continue to evolve and live a well life. Until next time, this is She signing out with a big smile, a soft gaze, a deep bow, and a namaste. Be simply. Thank you.